in a speech entitled A More Perfect Union, which she delivered on Tuesday, March 18th, Senator Barack Obama mentioned his pastor, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, of Trinity United Church of Christ on the south side of Chicago. Last June, at the General Assembly of the Unitarian Universalist Association in Portland, Oregon, my ministerial colleagues and I had the good fortune of hearing Jeremiah Wright speak. The Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association had invited him to share his thoughts and reflections morning and afternoon during our annual collegial gathering. I would estimate that at least 500 Unitarian Universalist ministers were present for his presentation. And so far as I could tell, we were all deeply impressed. Jeremiah Wright explained how he had drawn from African cultural traditions, liberation theology, linguistics, musicology, African American history, and a dozen other specialized fields of study, some of which I had never heard of before, in putting together his particular approach to his ministry with Trinity United Church of Christ. I found his presentation to us absolutely brilliant. And thus I was surprised to hear that Jeremiah Wright had become, in recent weeks, a nationally recognized figure of controversy. Having learned about the scholarly context which has informed Jeremiah Wright's remarkable ministry, I appreciated Barack Obama's willingness, in response to this controversy, to place Jeremiah Wright in another context, namely the context of American racial prejudice and injustice, which has also informed his remarkable ministry. I would like to quote a few lines from Barack Obama's speech where he mentions this context. The fact is that the comments that have been made and the issues that have surfaced over the last few weeks reflect the complexities of race in this country that we've never really worked through, a part of our union that we have yet to perfect. Understanding this reality requires a reminder of how we arrived at this point. We do not need to recite here the history of racial injustice in this country, but we do need to remind ourselves that so many of the disparities that exist in the African American community today can be traced directly to inequalities passed on from an earlier generation that suffered under the brutal legacy of slavery and Jim Crow. This is the reality in which Reverend Wright and other African Americans of his generation grew up, Barack Obama continued. They came of age in the late 50s and early 60s, a time when segregation was still the law of the land and opportunity was systematically constricted. What's remarkable is not how many failed in the face of discrimination, but rather how many men and women overcame the odds. But for all those who scratched and clawed their way to get a piece of the American dream, there were many who didn't make it, those who were ultimately defeated in one way or another by discrimination. That legacy of defeat was passed on to future generations, those young men and increasingly young women, who we see standing on street corners or languishing in our prisons without hope or prospects for the future. Even for those blacks who did make it, questions of race and racism continue to define their worldview in fundamental ways. For the men and women of Reverend Wright's generation, the memories of humiliation and doubt and fear have not gone away, nor have the anger and the bitterness of those years. That anger may not get expressed in public, in front of white workers or white friends, but it does find voice in the barbershop or around the kitchen table. And occasionally, Barack Obama points out. Occasionally it finds voice in the church on Sunday morning, in the pulpit and in the pews. The fact that so many people are so surprised to hear that anger in some of Reverend Wright's sermons simply reminds us of the old truism that the most segregated hour in American life occurs on Sunday morning. But the anger is real, it is powerful, and to simply wish it away, to condemn it without understanding its roots, only serves to widen the chasm of misunderstanding that exists between the races. Now, I would like to think that our gathering here this morning and our gatherings in our home congregations will serve as places where we can hear this anger without simply wishing it away, and where we can appreciate some understanding of its roots. For the truth is that for 30 years, Reverend Jeremiah Wright has been lifting up a corner of the American carpet and insisting that we all look more closely at what has been swept under it. And perhaps we too can take hold of that corner of the American carpet and lift it up just a little more than we have in the past, and reflect just a little more carefully than we have in the past about what is too often unseen and unmentioned and unaddressed. And perhaps we can imagine a little more boldly than we have in the past what our Unitarian Universalist churches might do to move beyond what Barack Obama calls the racial stalemate in this country, clearing a little more space than we have in the past for the work of reconciliation and justice and understanding and hope. Here at the First Unitarian Church of Pittsburgh, for example, we are hoping to be able to call a minister of color to join our church staff sometime in the next year or two. Our intention is to do this in partnership with the Unitarian Universalist Association through the Diversity of Ministry Initiative. We will need to work through some serious challenges to be able to follow through with this. And, of course, it may not work out at all. First, we will need to raise the money. Second, we will most likely need to deepen our individual understandings of racism and racial justice. And third, we will most likely need to make some adjustments in our congregational culture. But it is very important for this congregation and others to make this effort, to make an attempt in a serious and substantial way to clear a little space for reconciliation and justice and understanding and hope. In a recent article, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette columnist Tony Norman wrote about Barack Obama and Jeremiah Wright. At one point in his article, Tony Norman said this: "Worship communities aren't patriotic. To the extent that they are, they're unfaithful to their higher calling as prophetic communities. Churches, synagogues, and mosques are alternate spaces where loyalty to the transcendent supersedes all earthly allegiances, binding people of different classes, races, and dogmas together." "Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's," Jesus is said to have said, "and render unto God what is God's." Now, although some Unitarian Universalists will prefer to say, "and render unto whom it may concern," that which rightfully belongs to whom it may concern, the message is nevertheless clear. Communities of faith are sometimes called to stand against certain cultural attitudes and practices and institutional structures, offering prophetic criticism toward those cultural attitudes and practices and institutional structures when they block the beloved community in which all are included and none are excluded, in which all have real opportunities to participate economically and socially and politically and culturally in the larger society. Caesar will object strongly to this prophetic criticism. Some of Caesar's sympathizers will object that churches and their leaders are not being patriotic when they offer prophetic criticism, will object that churches and their leaders are rendering unto in the wrong direction when they offer prophetic criticism. In recent weeks, as we know, these objections have been leveled at Jeremiah Wright. And years ago, as we recall, 40 years ago to be precise, these objections were leveled fatally at Martin Luther King Jr. Elsewhere in his article, Tony Norman wrote, "God help us if churches, synagogues, and other places of worship ever become saccharine temples of conformity." When he urges his readers to avoid conformity, Tony Norman is not talking about wearing blue jeans to church or instead of more formal dress. And he is not talking about making complaints regarding traditional theological language. Rather, he is talking about avoiding conformity to unkind attitudes and unjust practices and oppressive institutional structures. He is talking about offering prophetic criticism of the culture when its attitudes are unkind, when its practices are unjust, when its institutional structures are oppressive. Rendering unto that which is not Caesar is challenging. Nevertheless, is it not what we are called to do?